So what does slot mean to you?
Okay, thank you, Aaron. That's a good, large question. For me, slot is a place of experimentation in which suddenly ideas that float in the clouds can be made real, and it is a place of development and expansion. It's also a place where many different people can find something that would interest them in their creative lives, older and younger. I like this generational crossover, that it's not just, let's say, knowledge that is a little out of time, but it is in time. It's knowledge in time with a certain history, going back to a sense of history and a sense of experimentation, daring, and at times even making mistakes, but better make mistakes than not try out certain things. Does that...
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that the question is phrased in the way that it is what does slot mean to you, is this sense that over the years the organization has almost functioned as a screen, as a surface onto which people project what they want to find in it. Would you agree with that, or do you think that slot, is there something very specific at the heart of slot, or is it in fact something that one imagines or finds in it what one's looking for in a way?
Okay. I think there are two aspects. One is hospitality to people who come with good ideas we hadn't thought of, and helping them expand, develop them. Another is judgment, I might say, and maybe a political judgment, and a sense of values of perhaps at times control as well, and not to accept absolutely everything in view of a certain situatedness of who we are, what we are doing, and again, this link with history, a certain history of the avant-garde, a certain history of the links between society, the arts, thinking, philosophy, and so on. So these are slightly contradictory elements. One would suggest that everything is possible. Everybody who comes with a good idea will be helped. The second implies that we have a certain program, but this is not a written program. It's more a sense of values and judgment, I would say again.
And over the years, in a way, three perhaps modes of activity have developed. What we're calling Slot in Philadelphia, the digital space of slot.org, and also a variety of numerous initiatives in the world at large. How do you see the relationship between these three? Do you see them as distinct? And how could you imagine, whether through historical models or just thinking in the present, how might one represent that interconnectedness, both visually but also like philosophically? Mm. I mean, do you see Philadelphia as a city that's fundamentally intertwined with the world? Would that linkage or lack of linkage be a metaphor for the organization in a way?
I think here again, I would appeal to a certain sense of history. In my lifetime, I have seen amazing changes brought about by technology. As a young scholar, I started out with a typewriter, and I would hire secretaries to type my texts. And in my time, even for some people, not exactly for me, but just taking a train to go from one province town in France to Paris was a big thing. Now I think there is this sense that the world has become globalized, for better or worse, and we are part of that. Within that very broad concept, slot has, I think, a sort of insertion in a place like Philadelphia. And I feel it's very much a product of Philadelphia. which is an interesting city with a very rare combination of influences, and I like the history of Philadelphia, but I think it's no exception. Philadelphia, like all American cities, like all cities in the world, have this connection with the rest of the world, whether they make a lot of it or not. So in that sense, I've always been for a sort of globalization of thought. I've liked the possibilities of doing things in other cities, but nevertheless, it's clear that should the place disappear, it would be different. There is somehow this link with a certain city, many institutions, universities, people who have been here, who come back, and so on. It wouldn't be the same if we had slot in Brussels, let's say, for instance. So there is a sense that it is at heart a Philadelphian enterprise, even though I am not Philadelphian, I'm not even American. But I like more precisely the idea represented by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the idea of Philadelphia, this kind of hospitable city where all religions originally in America were allowed to settle and so on, and still there, as opposed to, say, Boston or New York, where money is really the driving force and so on. So ideas I've had, and ideas in all the meanings, have had the dynamic force here. So given this interaction between the world, our space, and the technology that allows us to put ideas on the web evolves. Today, what we have done 10 years ago looks almost normal. 10 years ago, it was rather daring to want to have everything on the web with access and so on. More and more, every institution I know is following this, every press I know is doing this, every university has programs abroad, and so on. So we cannot foresee exactly where this will lead us in 10 years, let's say, but it's likely that, you know, when every Chinese person has an iPhone, which may happen soon, how will the world be? That's what we should be ready for, and I think we have always gambled on this kind of openness to the world via the cloud somehow.
Do you see the cloud as a mode of activity unto itself? I say this in the sense of the fact that many, although we've always privileged an intimate form of encounter, an intimate mode of programming, many of our publics do not know this space and will never have that opportunity, or that will not be the relationship they have with the organization. So over time, I've begun to think more and more that the cloud, the web, represents almost like an entirely another mode of activity of the organization, and likewise the activities in the world in the same manner. But in hearing you speak, and I guess it makes sense since you live in Philadelphia, in a way the organization is the space. Here, I guess.
I think, you know, for instance, I've done virtual visits of museums, some of which I had already seen, and others, like the Barnes that is being rebuilt. I think we could easily have a virtual visit of the space. It wouldn't be difficult to organize. So I think what the cloud does, and it's not the only thing it does, is the ability to create that kind of experience of a certain space. But I think it's more the concepts that underpin the experience that define our identity. And these concepts were elaborated over time via certain practices and certain choices we made.
Should an institution, and an institution like ours, which identifies as experimental in one way or the other, should it have a fixed identity in a graphic sense and in an online sense? Are there historical examples or other examples that you're familiar with where there was an attempt to translate a fluid identity, whether through changes in typography or through other maneuvers, across different projects, voices, cultures, geographies?
If you talk about typography, I have strong ideas about typography. I think that every font has a certain identity, and that even the difference between Romans, italics, capitals changes everything. I don't think Slot should be marked by a certain font, clearly. But I think that there should be a continuity in a certain sense of style. And that, for instance, in my own experience as head of a little press, we had a certain type, since we would publish only books and do readings, we liked one, we had decided that we liked Bodoni as a font, and all our books were printed in Bodoni. The size would vary according to the projects. But I think for something like Slot, it would be a little absurd. I think what counts is the sense of a certain style that would remain the same. And it may or may not be marked by changing or identical typographies. I think that an institution, a group, a political party gains by keeping a certain sense of identity. This identity need not be fetishized as a logo, a brand, a signature, a font, so on. But there should be a sense of style, and this style should reflect what is in the organization, like accessibility, clarity, conceptualization, and a sense of the openness of what is possible from what we have. So it's not a very concrete answer, but I think there should be something that keeps a link with the past of what we've had, and that would somehow be recognizable as such. That's the thing. I don't think we should change like every month or every year in such a way that things would be totally new and you couldn't recognize something like the Slot style, as it were.
But conceptually, you could imagine future projects that range from a perpetual peace project that involves NGOs to an architectural initiative to a social services project, all having a single, coherent, consistent style, in a way?
Yeah.
Or do you think style would mean something different in relation to different disciplines and communities?
No, I think the style should be the style of the organization, not of each project.
And so what would... I know you've just been talking about this, but what would be some of the words you would associate with that style then? It wouldn't be something like elegance. What would it be?
It should also be beautiful. Yeah. Beauty should be part of it. So, I mean, we have all our political, ideological, ethical values, but I think that in this case, beauty is important, and one of my models, for instance, is the international situationist that was so subtle in its use of a recognizable font and very luxurious paper, glossy paper, and the covers that you may have seen, the original covers. I still own a few of these with sort of shiny and at times mirror-like covers. Debord, Van Eygen, and so on had this sense that it created a strange paradox to have revolutionary ideas expressed in kind of glossy paper with shiny reflective surfaces and so on, which they really systematically kept. And I think that was a certain beauty, and it was also ironized by what they were saying. I wish something like that could be kept. I don't know whether it's possible.
But would it be that precise model, that precise articulation, or would it have to be reinvented?
Would have to be reinvented.
And would it... Would something like a Fluxus or a Letrist kind of maneuver would be too playful?
Why not?
Yeah.
I like the Letrist. Yeah. I mean, we've always paid attention to the history of the avant-garde, or you know, what is often called the historical avant-garde. They've been very playful, and there are many, many things we can find there, and we can also invent other things. I'm not very particular. I'm not fetishistic. I think beauty should not be to the detriment of accessibility. And I think there are. It's also very easy to fall in bad taste quickly, so one has to be extremely careful.
But then, but just to reiterate, despite the diversity and the hybridity of our programs, the organization's identity need not be understood as always in flux. That's what you're basically saying.
You know, I don't think we want to be always in flux. There is a flux anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been fluctuating a lot already, I think. So I don't think it's the problem, flux. You precisely by definition, you cannot decide that you'll be in flux.
Yeah.
It's when you think you are not in flux that you discover you are.
Yeah.
And when you want to be in flux, often you discover you're not in flux.
But is the institutional graphic online identity, is it supposed to perform that dynamic, that contradiction, or not?
I think a good typography embodies a sense of tension,
which you before mentioned, maybe with regard to the situation as irony.
Tension that creates energy.
Uh-huh.
Energy is created by a certain sense of tension, and you know, the expectations about what is a beautiful font, and the experience of reading what it has to convey is one. There are many of those tensions. I don't think contradiction, but the dynamic tension is often something that, you know, like if you take Elsevier, for instance, like the late 19th century society of the Elsevier, they had chosen a sort of reactionary position with a certain avant-gardist content, because they were showing, aha, we are going back to Italian models of the Renaissance and we are printing rare texts and so on. It's not what we want to do, clearly, at the level of our organization. So I think somehow the choice of fonts participates of the general thinking that produces the work. And I am not a typographer, but I think all this is important. There should be a sense of beauty, a sense of legibility, and a sense of tension.
Third question. Actually, it's the fourth. We've numbered these, starting at zero. So how should our archive be made relevant and contemporary to a variety of audiences? How can we enter and conceive of the archive as at once indexable and navigable, but also fundamentally heterogeneous? As you know, the archive has within it such diverse materials.
I mean that's a very important question, because I've heard many of my friends saying that our website was confusing, that they couldn't use it, and they had really to navigate it. I think it should be made more hierarchical, in a sense, with an easier navigation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how to do it. I don't have concrete solutions, but it is difficult to use.
I mean, if you were to think of it philosophically, in philosophical terms, for any other cultural organization, it would be fairly straightforward. You know, there are activities of different formats.
Mm.
There are various topics. The nature of our programs has been that we've moved through considerably different historical and discursive periods and positions, and communities that go beyond even an academic or an artistic sense of community. So philosophically, I mean, there is the taxonomic question, how do you structure it? But also philosophically, the archive is marked by extraordinary diversities and trajectories that don't come back to the center. Is that something that you've encountered elsewhere? I mean, is that a feature of any archive, of any library, for instance?
The library's problem is fairly simple by comparison, because basically they have only one type of object. I mean, at times you have films, but basically they're books and locations. Okay. In our case, no issue of location, but the objects are very different. And I think they should be somehow cross-referenced, which is a way of creating subdivisions of relationships and so on.
And are you one that believes in the possibility of an encounter with something you weren't looking for in this archival system, or is it really you should just be able to find something? I mean,
what do you mean by an encounter?
Is it fundamentally that this material, it's information, and the information should be accessible, or is it important that you can meander in the way that you meander in a book, in a library book stack, so to speak? Is it important that you come across something you weren't looking for? Because this may be
browsing.
I don't want to define things here. I want to ask you the questions, but
I think both should be possible. I mean, for instance, take the example of a library. I like being able to find what I'm looking for when I'm in a hurry, and I like to browse. These are not exactly the same activities. It's likely that we've seen this with Amazon and so on. They recreated a little bit the impression that you can browse books and also find connected books for your interests and so on. I think when we have all our projects lying side by side, it's tempting to look at similar projects. But I think at this point it's quite normal to have the possibility of browsing. There should also be the possibility of finding quickly exactly what you want. I don't see this as incompatible at all. It's not a choice to do it.
Ought it be playful?
Not too much. Because, you know, the playfulness of one person becomes an annoyance for another person. And playfulness, you know, it depends what is playful, but I think if you can manage to have a good retrieval system and the incentive to browse the rest, then it's the person who is playful. I don't think we should be playful with our material. No.
And what of this idea that we've been thinking about with regard to the values of the organization being a way that you can navigate through the archive? That in other words, you don't just navigate by virtue of whether it was an exhibition or a public program, but also by the concept that it performs in a way.
Yeah, but I think, you know, most of the time these days, people have little time. We cannot presuppose that everybody is a flaner within our system. And so if we want to be effective, we need people to find quickly what we have to offer. So this is why, again, I think if playfulness reduces this, I am against playfulness. But if there is an added value of, you want to be playful, we can ask. And then people can, you know, like you randomize things, like you do shuffle with your CDs. You could do something like that. But I think it should be an option, and that above all, you have 5 minutes to spend before you send an email to so-and-so, and you want to verify something, and you know it's on the Slot website. If you can't find it in 5 minutes, then there's a problem.
Would you be comfortable with this idea of there being different archival navigation systems one that represents an institutional voice, one that represents a public voice, and one that maybe represents like a practitioner voice? Or is that seem daunting to you? That's three navigation systems.
You know, if I manage one already, I'm happy. I don't think we should have several navigations. I think one should allow people to work creatively with what we have, but I think if we have one navigation that works, we'll be happy already.
Okay.
It means like streamlining many things.
Yes.
I mean, this is what I've heard, for instance, you know, when I heard people saying, the font was too small, I can't read it. It's true at times. With a book, I've done books that were, and I made mistakes a long time ago, a book in, I think was in 10, but I mean for the French size, I don't know. It was indeed very hard to read, and it killed the book. The author was happy, but not the readers. But this is something to be avoided at times. People don't realize that it's against their own wishes, but accessibility should be there. I think that's the first. And then after accessibility, a certain sense of style and beauty, and then the possibility of being playful, but as an added level.
Final question. As with the space of Slot as a physical space, so too with the website. We're interested in seeing the website as a means by which to cultivate publics, imagine models for conversation, encourage meaningful engagement. In addition to the archival the taxonomy, in addition to questions of accessibility and the font, is this something you would like the website to perform, first of all, and is it something that you have any ideas about as to how it could do that? On the simplest level, if this is an organization that privileges dialogue, should the website also enact that, and how could it?
This is the blog model. Should we have blogs? I'd say ideally yes, if we can have people who have the time to do it well. Bad blogs are terrible, and so I go on one or two, like Pierre Joris, I don't know whether you use that, and this is very well done, or our friends in Philadelphia, Roberta.
Because you associate a blog with conversation.
The blog is something in which you can see the voices of other people who say, oh yes, I liked it, and so on. It's a lot of work to do it well. And some people devote time, money, even paying helpers to do it well. I think it can be done halfway, that kind of model. See, at some point, a long time ago, we had started doing this, conversations and so on. In my own experience with what we did, it was a failure and it created mistakes. At least in my own case, two or three friends were very unhappy.
The publication, online publication.
No, you remember when we started this thing with Catherine Liu and so on. We asked a number of friends to intervene, and we thought we could have a blackboard or they could post things and so on.
Yeah.
It's an ideal situation, and I think if we do very well in the next 5 years, we should do that. But I don't think one can do this in an amateurish manner.
So you would see the organization as, to go back one step, for the organization to support meaningful conversation, dialogue, engagement, this would be under the rubric of particular projects, like for instance the recording of Leo Bersani's conversation from the other night. It would be a subset of that?
For instance, that recording. It would be nice if we had people who would send us messages, I hated it, I loved it, why did you say that, where can I see more, and so on, and we could respond to that.
And that would be, in addition to the availability and accessibility of that media, that residue of the event, there would also be the possibility of some further, but it would be a textual commentary.
Yeah.
It would be a blog commentary in a way.
Like for instance, I heard from this guy who was in Atlanta, a guy, I think, I'm not sure, who made films from our archives. So that was a private communication. I think it would be interesting to have that, to have had that project somewhere on our website, that somebody who is an artist should have created things where our voices recorded were used. I don't know why, but you see, for instance, that's the kind of intervention that I think we should be able to absorb somewhere, somehow.
Because for you, the event, whatever the event consists of, whether it's a discourse or an exhibition, and the event, broadly speaking, enacts a conversation that others should be able to continue.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Well, at times, you know, it's interesting to know that some people reject or hate, or, you know, touch a nerve and so on, or don't know. What people don't know is also interesting. What you think it's obvious, and then you teach them something just like that, it's good to know as well. And people can be honest, say, oh, wow, I didn't know that, I learned this, but that I don't understand, or that I don't like, and then you can explain.
And this would apply, ideally, if this were to be put into effect, perhaps one would need a facilitator or moderator.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. That's why I'm saying that it needs more people doing this.
But this would apply retroactively, too, to the past archives.
Of course.
To those that have a currency by virtue of having just happened.
Absolutely. That's why I was putting this guy, whose name now escapes me, Rhea something. Because he had taken all our archives and then made a sort of a little film, two films. I don't know why. But I never met him or her. The name was a little opaque. They were well done. They were really good. It would have been fun to have that somewhere, but there might be other appropriations like this. I think we love appropriations, or, you know, people stealing from us and so on. It's great.